and welcome to another edition of Visions. With me, Yuruli Wickham Ashby. And as we get closer and closer to Christmas Day and truly represent and experience the Christmas season with lots of love, merriment, and of course, supporting others, I want to share my space today with a young, handsome, energetic, vibrant young man out of Trinidad and Tobago, Kerwin Thomas, the president of the Trinidad and Tobago chapter of DPI, Disabled Peoples International. Welcome to the program, Kerwin.
Hi, Ms. Yuruli Ashby. I thank you so much for having me onto your program, to persons who are actually listening and probably those who may be viewing this evening's program. I just want to say Christmas greetings to each and everyone in Barbados and those around the region and here in Trinidad and Tobago. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure, because I have been following you and really admiring the excellent work and the tireless work that you're doing to encourage, promote, and really support persons with disabilities, their families and caregivers in Trinidad and by extension, the Caribbean. So Kerwin, I want to start by asking you to share a little about your journey with your disability.
Thank you so much. Well, my journey with my disability started in 2005 when I became paraplegic due to an incident that, left me unable to walk. I think from that dreaded turn of events, which actually transformed my life into what is next? How then do I move forward? Because, even in the, if I could say the first quarter of my life, I was able-bodied, moving around, working, student, going to school. And actually, at that time, I had two young children. I have a son and also a daughter. At that time, I think when I became paraplegic, my son was a year and some months, and my daughter was actually 8 months. Not being retained in my job, I had to really, dig deep spiritually and all emotionally, and just to try to kind of put the pieces of my life back together again, And I really, really thank God for the support that I had, the support system of my family and those that were around me, giving me that level of encouragement, where I could be able to at least see life from a different perspective. I think life is about perspective. And then how do you accept the changes that have been brought upon you? The cards that you were dealt in order for you to be able to make certain contributions to get yourself out of the situation that you're in, or work with the situation that you're in, So that has been now, if not 19, 20 years that I've been a paraplegic, and definitely it really didn't stop me. It really motivated me to push forward and really be an advocate for persons with disabilities.
Okay. Well, I can still see the energy coming.
Yeah.
Yes. So you acquired the disability, and as you just said, your family and friends were there to give you support. And we know that that is so vital to a person's recovery and further development. So tell us a little about your family network and the level or the type of support that was given to you as a young man now having to adjust from being able to walk around and move independently to retraining yourself to move independently in a different manner.
Yeah, definitely. I think that my family has always been a family who we had a lot of spiritual background. Every Sunday or even during the week, your grandmother will always ensure that he in the church or sang in the choir, so we always had that spiritual support. My wife as well too, as I said, was always there, and I've always heard stories of persons who acquired the disabilities that sometimes they either fiancés, girlfriends, or sometimes they leave them. They leave them in a position where they themselves kind of go into a mental kind of block, And then too, just knowing that I had two children who just needed me the most, I think that kind of propelled me to continue, it wasn't as easy as I'm probably explaining it to, because it was like a series of a lot of doubts and ifs and different things that were playing in your mind at that time, But Sabrina, my wife, she encouraged me, hey, come on, let's go by the mall, or come on, let's go outside and let's go by the beach. And so certain moves, I was like, nah, you all go ahead, nah, I cool, I, you all go out and enjoy yourselves. And, you know, that push from them actually kind of promoted me to kind of go out and just see life for what it was and be accepted, you know, as a person who is, you know, I mean, living this new life as somebody who is a wheelchair user, you know? Yeah.
Right. So let's talk a little about the doubts and the acceptance and what that part of the road was like. I think every human being has doubts at different
Yes,
stages
different
in their
stages.
lives, you know, but now acquiring a disability, and as you said, just knowing that your wife was there and giving you that love and support, and knowing that you have children that you have a major responsibility towards. Speak to me about some of the doubts and how you were able to manage them or overcome them.
For me, as a younger person at that time, I mean, I
Right.
was very, very active. I mean, in a lot of sports. I was like a promoter. We used to throw events, etc. So we had like a little team. So I mean, I was known, especially from the area that I lived in. I was known to the general community, you know. So and then at work, etc. So it was just a matter of just coming to terms with yourself. I think that persons with disabilities really have a kind of, or we could kind of lower self-esteem, you know, especially for persons who acquire the disabilities. I think there's a difference with persons who may have been born with a disability and persons who would acquire the disability, and how then do they transition from being accepted and going into a world unknown? Because definitely it's an unknown world that you're going into. It might be familiar, but it's still unknown territory because you have to learn to kind of come out there. And then when you go out there, people want to be staring. And then, so it's like so many things that'll be playing in your mind, you know, especially when you venture on the outside. And for me, as I said, it was just a matter of just consistently coming out. And one of the pillars that happened for me too is when I regained my level of mobility where I was able to drive again. And I think from there is when a lot of things started to move forward in the direction of just gaining that confidence again to go out and face the world for what it is and start back to go to school and just like kind of more or less, as I said, put the pieces of your life back together again. So that kind of, as I said, build the confidence, build your self-esteem, created a level of acceptance. Forgive as well to some of the persons who may have done you the wrong and caused you the level of grief or the situation that you're in, but really moving forward in a positive direction.
Fantastic, fantastic. So you talked about going back to school. Tell us about that and where has that taken you?
But the exciting time, as I said, is when I got back. And I'm being honest here, Miss Hillary, because I just want to be as honest as I can. My driver's permit would have expired within the time that I was in the accident and the time that I got a new vehicle, which was an automatic vehicle, where I could have used the hand controls in order for me to drive. And as soon as I bought the hand controls, the Saturday evening or Saturday afternoon, my Saturday night, I was able to go and pick up my wife from work. And I'm being honest, it was without having a valid driver's permit, probably expired like a month or 2 months before. And just being able to do something like that after a whole year and more hiatus was, you know, I mean, brought me real, real joy, you know, even for Sabrina, where I could have been able to pick up from work. And as I said, from there, really put the pieces back together. I enrolled myself in accredited organization here in Trinidad and Tobago called Star Broadcasting, where I went, I did advanced radio broadcasting as well, which I started. I mean, from then I moved on. I did marketing, public relations, advertising, went to University of the West Indies, did some a lot of short courses, different things under the cadre, you know, to really bring myself up to this place here. I started my law degree as well too. So, I mean, as I said, there's so many other things that I definitely want to pursue, even in, as I pursue in my career as someone. And most of these things I would have done, it was would have been when I acquired my disability, you know. So I just want to say to persons out there who might be looking at themselves and feeling like they cannot, I think that, I mean, looking at your video with this 5K and all, it spells a different story that, you know, everything is in the mind and whatever we put our minds so we can be able to achieve, you know. So I thank God for those opportunities.
Great, great. So, where are you now with your law degree?
Right now, as it is, I entered for the first year And I definitely had to make a little stop. So, I just need to just get back into the enrollment. So, I just want to be able to continue. I know I gave a lot of time for the organization as taking over as the chairman, and it required a lot of effort to try to get things kind of stabilized and off the ground and move things forward, etc. But I definitely will be pushing very, very hard to ensure that I come out with a LLB in law, definitely.
And I'm confident that you will achieve your law degree.
Most definitely.
Yes. So tell me now about your experience as president of the Trinidad and Tobago chapter of Disabled Peoples International, because I know in the NGO sector, it is extremely challenging to lead organizations and have the level of support and visionary people around to move the organization in the direction to benefit the constituents.
Yep. I came into the organization probably like 2 years after. It was 2008, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 2007, 2008. I was just a normal member, ordinary member. And I played basketball with the organization for a little while, or training with the organization for a little while. From then, I just was kind of in and out. In 2019 is when I made my way, because I was in more or less kind of active community work and politics within my constituency as well too, which I kind of moved away from to really focus on the needs of persons with disabilities, because we saw that no one after George Daniel really took up the mantle to really fight for persons with disabilities. I know George Daniel, God rest his soul, was a champion advocating for persons with disabilities here in Trinidad and also the region. I mean, something was always just giving you that nudge, you know, that you need to go in and really try to make that difference, you know. Going up, sometimes God does have a kind of thing. He kind of wants to nudge you every minute and make sure that, hey, try this, go on this, you know, I'm here to support. And there's always that little fear and that doubt, something that's just creeping. They tell you, nah, you ain't ready enough, but you don't have the capabilities and you don't have this. But you know what I mean? I pursue, because I always try to think positive and always try to move in a direction that, I mean, if God is for you, who can be against you? Moving forward, I became the president in 2022. Which is like about 2 years now. I'm the president of the TTDPI. And as you say, heavy is the head that wears the crown. I mean, leadership is not an easy feat, you know. And sometimes, you know, we really need to be able to have the right minds and the right persons who believe in the vision to really move an organization forward with the right capacity as well, too. Because we need to have the persons who have the capacity in order to drive what the objectives and the vision of the organization or the vision of the movement will dictate, you know. So there's always this challenge. I think it's a challenge regionally and, I don't know, probably globally, you know, for us to have the right minds and persons who are not just self-seekers, but persons who are really out there to serve the people, you know what I mean, with everything, you know. And I would have even left a government job that I had. I left that job early this year to really just do advocacy and work with the organization full-time. And I think that, you know, sometimes you're doing something real meaningful that gives you more joy, more pleasure, more peace. And I think that even now, as we continue, as I said, it's not an easy task, but I definitely try to do what I have to do to the best of my ability. So that is where we are now.
Right. So what would you say is one of your major achievements thus far?
As the president of the TTDPI?
Yes, please.
Probably we had several major achievements, but one of our major achievements, as I said, is getting this traffic amendments. We would have lobbied with the minister, sending letters to the minister, and also to having discussions with the transport commissioner. One, to remove a term where we have to register or reapply for a driver's permit every year. I mean, I think now that we could register every 5 years, just like an able-bodied person, and also to make sure that persons who were parking disabled spots, that they can be fined and also lose demerit points. I think those two achievements is one of the things that, you know, we stand out proud of. I mean, from the governmental side and from the NGO side, you know, just advocating to outside institutions and even institutions here locally, we were able to acquire some assistance from one of our sponsors for us to be able to provide food support for persons with disabilities, you know, for persons who reside within Trinidad and Tobago, because we aren't just Trinidad, we are Tobago as well, where we represent persons in Tobago as well, increasing our membership by over 100%, you know. So, and then attracting younger persons with more vibrancy into the organization, not dispelling the persons who are a little more experienced than us, but getting that TTDPI name out there so persons will know who we are, what we're about, and actually where we're going, you know. So, and then creating the connections with most of the government officials who are there to assist, to partner with us to move things forward. And when I say that, I don't say that everything is hunky-dory. We have a lot of work to do still, because there are a lot of things that we want to change, you know. We want to be able to change our disability grant and increase the disability grant from where it's at now to a point where it may be a little more satisfactory, where persons could be given the right food support, where we can be able to see more persons with disabilities employed in Trinidad and Tobago. You know, we want to see more employment opportunities. We don't just want people dependent on grants. We want people to be sustainably employed in Trinidad and Tobago. So it's a big feat. But I think that, you know, I mean, with the right people on board and the willingness of the general membership and that raising our voices in terms of the advocacy, I think that we could get it done, man, you know, and lending a hand to our regional partners, our sisters and brothers in the region, where we could stand up with one voice. Because I think that what goes on in Trinidad and Tobago, it goes on in Antigua, Barbuda, it goes on in Dominica, it goes on in Barbados. We may have different situations or challenges, or, you know, you all might have different laws, you know, might already, you all done pass and go on already, but just to make sure that we can be able to raise the standard of living for people with disabilities, I think that's a common thread.
Definitely. I think many people don't quite grasp it when we talk about the quality of life that persons with disabilities are experiencing. And when you are reliant on social services, it makes it very difficult to have a high quality life and to really lead independent lives. So what you're saying is quite true. It's quite necessary that we continue to advocate and support each other as we strive to definitely lead and improve.
Definitely.
So Karen, you spoke about your chapter of Disabled Peoples International, and you just mentioned, you know, lobbying to have the social assistance, that benefit, increased. What about the caregivers?
So that definitely will fall under the bracket as well, too, because we have mothers and fathers and persons who they cannot go out and seek employment, because most of the mothers or the fathers are to stay home and see about their children. I think that a mother or somebody who has a child with a disability, I think, is even less than somebody who has the particular disability itself. So we really want to advocate across the board so that persons with disabilities or even persons who are caregivers of persons with disabilities can be able to be afforded the same kind of treatment. You know, because some people feel like, you know, just having a child with a disability is just having a child, but they don't understand that child needs so much support. When we talk about probably behavioral therapists or different types of therapy, we're talking about pampers, we're talking about medication, all these other things. We need to really look at this on a holistic level and see the need. We do a list of some of the things that a person with a disability really need. So my child with autism definitely has to have so many therapies. We talk about speech therapy, we're talking about different types of assistance that is needed. And if we can be able to buffer these type of assistance through government support, you know, where parents could probably reach out to the government and say, all right, and even if they put a name on a list or whatever, it's not like a list and you have to wait a month or 3 months or a year or 2 years. Talking about support that can be able to really change the lives of persons and give them that hope, because I have heard so many success stories about persons who would have had that type of speech therapy and behavioral therapy, and they would have made drastic improvements. But it has to be consistent. It has to be something that the government either subsidize or they pay for entirely, because we just made mention as well, Ms. Gilvey, that persons who are caregivers, the caregivers of persons with disabilities, they themselves sometimes employed, they can't go out and seek employment because they have to stay 24/7 to see about their child or their niece or whoever it is in their care. You know?
What is the situation like regarding the employment of people with disabilities?
Persons with disabilities who, persons who have their CXC, probably did their, let's say, bachelor's, master's. Some persons apply for jobs, but we also look at the fact that ableism is something that, I mean, our society has really looked at someone with a disability, especially persons who do really understand that persons with disabilities can be contributors as well to society. I mean, we aren't just labeled as persons who are just a burden on the state, or just they just drain any the state's funds, or they cannot give back. I think that if we look at it and we see that persons with disabilities, that they can make meaningful contributions, that they themselves want place in a position and give any opportunity based on accessibility and everything else, they will see that persons with disabilities can be active providers in terms of giving back to society. For the Ministry of Labor, there is something called the Only Job Program. I think that gives a person with a disability, somewhat of an opportunity for them to come in to serve for like 2 years. It's a two-year arrangement. I mean, not just for persons with disabilities, but everybody. Once persons are interested to come out, and here was the problem with that. Because a person with a disability may find challenges not being able to guarantee a sustainable employment. You find that a person wouldn't want to take the chance to come off of their grant to go and do something for a year or 2 years, and then if they don't keep them, they'd have to go right back into applying for a disability grant again. If you understand what I'm saying, it comes like it puts them in a position. And I think that because of that fear, a person with a disability might just rather not want to go out there and do anything, you know. But I mean, sometimes we need to just not challenge government, but challenge private sector as well to let them see that, I mean, they could be contributors, create some remote working arrangements, you know what I mean? Because we know the challenges with transportation and all the other accessibility and the reasonable accommodation and all these other terminologies that creates the barriers for us. So if we could be able to really set up systems where we could give opportunities for persons with disabilities and see how best they function within our sphere.
So does the equal opportunities legislation really support and provide a meaningful gateway for persons with disabilities to obtain employment and retain it?
I haven't heard of any real cases. I know that there was one particular case where the president would have appointed a young lady by the name of Ms. Bajan an opportunity to work at the Equals Opportunities Commission, and they themselves would have failed her as well too. So I know that was a case that was going on probably like 2 years or 3 years ago. If I say that they are really pushing forward to ensure that persons with disabilities are really given that equal opportunities, I will say no. What I think should happen, I mean, we would like to push for that to happen, is the legislation that gives that level of credence, you know, that bill, once we get that legislation passed, that states in law, you know, we need to have a law and not just one agency out of the government, you know, I mean, coming up with some policies or objectives and how they guide their organization. But a law that states if somebody is discriminated against, that this employer should be, you know, faced with this and faced with that, and then it could be brought to a court of law, etc. I think that will definitely change the scope in terms of the discriminatory part of it. So I think that is something that we will be looking forward to. I think that the bill has been drafted already. It has been sent out to the first and second round of consultation. So we are waiting for it to be brought to Parliament, for it to be debated, etc., and passed.
Nice. Well, that is progress. And share your thoughts about how you think the collective can promote and really change the attitudes and legislation towards people with disabilities in CARICOM.
We need one voice. I think that, as I mentioned before, we face similar issues. I think that one of our problems, even right here in Trinidad and Tobago, you know, sometimes we speak with dissenting voices, we speak with different voices at times, you know. As leaders, we may not agree to everything, but we could disagree to agree. And I think that once we could come together under one umbrella, speaking one voice as forceful as we ought to, we can be able to really demand the level of change that is needed in the Caribbean. You know what I mean? So when we speak, the leaders have no other choice but to really listen, because there are so many people that depend upon the voices of the leaders that are here today in order for us to make the changes for them. When you look at the children in schools, the children with disabilities in the schools, I go into a school and I say, the decisions or the things that I do now will affect the lives of the level of advocacy that I do know will affect the lives of those children. You know, it gives you that level of momentum and that push to continue to do the right thing and to be able to really raise your voice as loud, you know, as more forceful as you can. I mean, a very, very, very forceful in a very good way, you know, so that people will really understand that you mean business. We really need to have that one voice saying that, hey, we mean business. And we really need you all to listen to us now. You know, we have listened, we have complied, we have, you know, but we really want to speak with one voice in the Caribbean.
Well said, Kerwin. Very well said. Now, as we get ready to wrap up the program, Kerwin, what is your perspective on healthcare? Because I know many people with disabilities cry out about the low level of support within the health system in terms of being able to obtain adequate care, adequate medication, equipment, rehabilitation, all of that that is wrapped up in healthcare. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that we really need to step it up in Trinidad and Tobago. We spend our budget a lot of money on healthcare. And I think that, a lot has not reached to persons with disabilities as it relates to proper rehabilitation center. I mean, could talk for Trinidad. I think that a lot needs to be done. I think that persons with disabilities, or even for myself who acquired my disability, there was like little or no support in terms of the rehabilitation part of it. Even when you go to the general hospital or the hospitals, you know, they try to treat you like everybody else. You have to wait your turn, your line, you know. But I think that we really need to do plenty work in terms of healthcare and really push for that level of support. In Trinidad and Tobago, as I said before, we spend a lot of money on healthcare. Let's just say you go to the hospital, you know what I mean? Sometimes the medication in the hospital, they may not have it in the hospital, and you have to go out and face the pharmacies. And sometimes when you get your bill from the pharmacist, it's like, you know what I mean, $400, you know, it's TT dollars. And that's an exorbitant fee for somebody who collects $2,000 a month. You know, and that's something you may not expect in that month that you had to go and face the doctor. You probably got an infection or something that happened within that period there, and you had to face that bill. And whilst I'm saying this, I'm not saying that persons with disabilities want everything for free or everything, but we just want to be in a position, as I said before, that we can be able to really provide for ourselves and push for ourselves. Whilst we know there are persons who may be in a different state in terms of the disability, because every case is different. I might be able to do things that other persons who might have my level of disability may not be able to do, or even some persons may be quadriplegic, etc. And we understand that, but more support and systems need to be put in place in terms of healthcare for those persons.
Hey, Kerwin. Now, we've touched quite a lot, and I just want your views on how do you think the organizations of persons with disabilities can attract younger people with disabilities and have them more involved and more committed to the advocacy and the other substantial work that needs to be done.
Yeah, excellent. I think that with the advent of social media has a big impact in terms of how young people communicate these days. And I think that once we can be able to be attractive into the eyes of persons with disabilities, spread the message of who we are, TTDPI, and what we do, what we represent, that will definitely give that level of hope to persons, younger persons with disabilities, to really want to get on board, to be a part, just to give of themselves as well, to come out and be a part of sports. We had a big sports and family day in Trinidad and Tobago in July, and a lot of young people came out who were part of the March Pass, who were competing in the different novelty events that we had. We invited the schools, most of the schools in Trinidad and Tobago, they came out and they participated as well too. So that gives a lot of attention to who we are, what we do, although that was just one aspect of it. But sport is our next vehicle that we can use as well too, so that we can be able to promote our para athletes in the Paralympic Games, etc., where persons could come out, they could be a part of the swimming, the rowing, shot putting, whatever different disciplines that they have in the para events, so that they can be able to represent their countries and just represent themselves and feel a part of and feel a sense of worthiness and, you know, just contributing to society. I think that once you get that feeling, it's a feeling that definitely never dies, because you just want to continue to push the limits and the boundaries. So I think that sport is definitely a vehicle that we can use as well in order for us to promote younger persons to get on board and be a part of the movement.
Well, it has been definitely a pleasure chatting with you. And, you know, I think as we talk with one another, the inspiration comes, the motivation comes.
Yeah.
We really then push to do more, not only for our organizations, but for our communities and our countries.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves of the contributions that we're making to national development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it really has been a pleasure, and I look forward to chatting with you and some of your fellow leaders soon.
Definitely.
Soon.
Thank you so much again for the opportunity. And to all your listeners and everybody listening on the outside, as I said before, have a blessed and wonderful season, and hope that you have a bright and prosperous 2025.
Thank you very much, Kerwin. You have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham-Ashby. Remember, you can reach out to me on 1246-269-9660 or 1246-430-7300. You can email me on visionsbarbados@gmail.com, and you can check this and past episodes by going to the VOB929.com website. So remember, love yourself and love people just as much as you love yourself. So until next week, ciao.